This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
President Kais Saied's speech in February, where he basically endorsed this racist conspiracy theory that migrants were basically coming to replace Tunisians, to change the demographic makeup of the country, very very similar to European racist conspiracies about a great replacement of white Europeans.
That was Fadil Ali Riza, founder and editor-in-chief of Maskal.org, an independent news website in English and Arabic covering Tunisia. Details coming up also. The United Nations warns that Sudan is on the brink of a full-scale civil war. And a Zimbabwe court blocked another opposition rally just over a month before the general elections. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The United Nations has warned that Sudan is on the brink of a full-scale civil war which could destabilize the entire region. Witnesses reported more airstrikes Sunday near the presidential palace in Khartoum and in Omdurman, as well as machine gun clashes and artillery fire in the city's south. Fighting between Sudan's military and the paramilitary rapid support forces erupted 3 months ago and has left around 3,000 people dead. International players have negotiated numerous ceasefires, which have been ignored. Leaders of Ethiopia, Kenya, Somalia, and South Sudan met today in Addis Ababa. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Molly Fee was traveling there too. However, Sudan's National Army did not send a delegation, although the RSF did. Egypt plans to hold a summit of Sudan's neighbors on Thursday to seek an end to the conflict and its regional repercussions. Civil aviation authorities have extended the closure of Sudan's airspace until July 31st, with the exception of approved humanitarian and evacuation flights. Sudanese citizens have had mixed reactions to the call by military leader Abdel Fattah al-Burhan for young people to take up arms against the paramilitary rapid support forces. While some see it as defending their country, others worry that more recruitment might extend the conflict. Michael Atit reports from Juba, South Sudan.
As Sudan's conflict enters the third month of fighting, the Sudanese military leader has reiterated his call for young people to take up arms against the paramilitary rapid support forces, or RSF. Some citizens see the call as national duty. People have the right to take up arms so they are able to defend themselves and their country, said Abdulazim Ishaq, a Sudanese citizen in Khartoum. Ishaq told VOA he has encouraged his 32-year-old son, Muhammad, to join the army and contribute to defending the country. He says al-Burhan's call is overdue. He says citizens must stand together to defend it. And while establishment of a civilian government remains valid, right now all must stand alongside the military to defend the country. The United Nations said at least 3,000 people have been killed and 2.8 million people have been displaced. Khadija Mu'tez, a 35-year-old mother of three boys and two girls, says the call to arms will place more young people in harm's way and they will not be well trained. Mu'tez says this means we are going to witness growing numbers of orphans and widows across the country. And women will be the ones taking the burden of all the responsibilities. This week, a Sudanese military official showed some video of dozens of people in civilian clothes parading in one of the military barracks in Omdurman. Nabil Abdullah, Sudan's military spokesperson, confirmed to VOA that thousands of volunteers have registered across Sudan and they are now undergoing some basic training before they are sent to fight. Abdullah says the youth have responded positively and they are registering in thousands across the country. He said most of citizens have been demanding such a move since the beginning of the war. Yusuf Izzat, political advisor to the RSF commander, condemned the call by Al-Burhan for young people to join the fight as a clear sign of defeat and said it is a crime. He told VOA the RSF is determined to continue fighting what he describes as elements of the Islamist government of ousted President Omar al-Bashir. Azad accuses the military of obstructing the establishment of a democratic civilian-led government in Sudan.
We try to solve this problem once and forever. Nobody will fight tribes, and we don't want tribes to be involved in this issue. This is a national war. It's about national agenda, about future of Sudan, but to solve the root causes of the conflict.
Regional and international mediation efforts have not been successful since fighting erupted on April 15th. Michael Atit for VOA News, Juba, South Sudan.
A Zimbabwe court on Sunday blocked another opposition rally just over a month before the general elections. The court said the opposition did not notify the police on time, and the police said the venue was a bushy piece of land without roads or other services. The opposition Citizens Coalition for Change, or CCC, alleges the ZANU-PF-led government has increasingly suppressed the opposition. Among the tactics the CCC says are bans on rallies, violence against its supporters, and the arrest of some party leaders. A short time ago, I spoke with Blessing Zulu, the managing editor for VOA's Shona service, about these allegations.
Of course, this is why some political commentators and election observers are of the opinion that there cannot be a free and fair election in Zimbabwe. And of course, the background is that Zimbabwe has always had these disputed elections with the incumbent. Previously, it was the late Robert Gabriel Mugabe, now his predecessor, Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is being accused of using the police and the courts to stifle the opposition. And this is why there was this huge, huge outcry yesterday when an opposition rally was banned. And last week, two more rallies were banned by the police. And since the strongest opposition party, that is the Citizens Coalition for Change, or CCC, was formed in January last year, 92 of its rallies have been banned by the police.
And Blessing, the most amazing thing is the court in the town of Bendura upheld Friday's police order that the Opposition Citizens Coalition for Change, the CCC party, could not hold the rally to officially launch its election campaign because the venue was unsuitable. So the CCC has appealed in court against the order. Is there anything on that front?
Of course. First, it was the major street in Bindura, that is in Mashonaland Central Province, who had ruled that the case would be heard on Tuesday, which is tomorrow, and the rally was supposed to be held yesterday, which is Sunday. But the electoral law is very clear that the opposition party can or that such matters can be heard in is on an urgent basis, like in this case, the rally was on Sunday, and the magistrate insisted that she could only hear the case on Tuesday. So the opposition went to a higher court, the High Court, and the High Court judge ruled that the magistrate had erred in saying she wanted to preside over the case on a Tuesday, which is tomorrow. So the High Court judge ordered the magistrate to attend to the matter, that is on Sunday, before 12 noon. But the magistrate ignored that High Court directive and only passed the judgment at around 4 p.m. The opposition rally was supposed to be at 10 a.m. In the morning. That is when it was supposed to start. So this is why the opposition is accusing President Emmerson Mnangagwa's ruling party of conniving with the courts and the police to deny them the right to hold rallies ahead of the August 23 elections.
As you know, Blessing Mnangagwa 80 replaced long-ruling autocrat Robert Mugabe in a coup in 2017. Then he promised a new era of freedom, prosperity for Zimbabweans who had seen their country's economy crumble amid some of the highest inflation rates ever seen. But critics are saying Mnangagwa has turned out to be as repressive as his predecessor. What say you?
That is the accusation from government critics. But of course, Mr. Mnangagwa's party is denying that, for example, they are responsible for the banning of rallies. I reached out to their spokesperson, Ambassador Chris Mutangwa, and this is what he said about the accusation that they are stifling democracy and the opposition. He said, and I quote, the opposition just has to get its act together and please leave us out of their organizational woes as they flounder to electoral walloping come 23 August.
That was my colleague Blessing Zulu with VOA's Shona Service. Former South African President Jacob Zuma, dogged by corruption allegations at home, recently represented Belarus at a carbon credit conference in Zimbabwe. Belarus is supporting Russia's invasion of Ukraine and hosting the controversial Wagner group of Russian mercenaries after an aborted threat against Moscow. Analysts say Zuma's close relations with Minsk landed him a job as a board member at the Belarusian African Foreign Trade Association. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, Zimbabwe.
Delegates to the Africa Voluntary Carbon Credits Market Forum Conference in Zimbabwe's tourist resort destination of Victoria Falls. That was after former South Africa President Jacob Zuma had finished his 4-minute speech streamed online in Belarus.
Brothers and sisters, as a demonstration that Africa is on the move, may I hand over this check of 2 million carbon offsets to the organizers of this important conference as our pledge to the AVCCM visionary leaders who have shown that indeed we are on the road. I thank you.
Later, one conference organizer, Benny Chimutengo, said Zuma made the special presentation for the Belarusian African Foreign Trade Association, of which he is a board member. He said Belarus' support of Russia's invasion of Ukraine was not affecting Zuma and was not relevant to the conference.
So we're not talking about geopolitics. Geopolitics will leave it to politicians. You are standing in for the government of Belarus, and I'm sure you know Belarus, even to Zimbabwe, they have sent us 3,500 tractors. So it's the government of Belarus that have sent President Zuma to present it on their behalf. So they understand that for... I like what they do is because they understand Africans. They have sent an African leader in terms of, you know, he is a traditional leader, as a black African, to come and present on their behalf. So I think that's a very huge gesture. And we want to see even Americans looking for African former presidents to come and present on their behalf. We don't have a problem if it was Obama. We didn't have a problem if it was Boris Johnson. We would not even have a problem if it was Trump. So when you look at former presidents, we actually want them to make them our climate ambassador. He is our climate ambassador. And we are going to appoint more former presidents as climate ambassador because they speak to grassroots.
Alexander Rusero, who has the International Relations Studies Department at Africa University in Zimbabwe, says Zuma's relationship with Minsk emanates from the Soviet Union, which included Russia and Belarus. South Africa's ruling political party, the African National Congress, was militarily trained and funded by the USSR.
So all this, if you connect the dots, you would realize that when push comes to shove, South Africa will always lean in favor of the Russia as opposed to favor the global North, in as much as the positions to take on the Russia-Ukraine war are concerned. There is no issue of non-alignment here. There is no issue of being neutral here. South Africa is ideologically soft when it comes to Russia, as opposed to the United States, because of these historical dynamics, which a lot of liberation movements, of which ANC is one, support. So Jacob Zuma coming in on behalf of the Belarusians, it tells you a lot about the history. There's a lot of historical weight, historical baggage and historical burden that still informs the day-to-day running of states and ideological underpinnings of African countries, even as we are in the post-Cold War era.
Meanwhile, Kwanele Hlabangana, an organizer of the conference in Victoria Falls, said he was hopeful Africa would benefit from its natural resources sustainably.
This vision seeks to put Africa in the center of global development trajectory, where the Africans actively participate and benefit from its own natural resources and tap into the enormous global markets. It is time Africa arises. We are that generation of Africans that are not only determined, but have the necessary tenacity and ingenuity, the patriotism, to make Africa a better continent.
The delegates concluded their three-day conference with an agreement to meet again next year at the same venue. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi will embark tomorrow on an Africa tour in an effort to reduce the Islamic Republic's isolation by forging new alliances. The French news agency AFP says the three-day trip, which includes Kenya, Uganda, and Zimbabwe, is the first by an Iranian president to Africa in 11 years. Raisi heads a delegation that includes Iran's foreign minister and senior business people. He is scheduled to meet with presidents from the three countries, according to the official IRNA news agency. On Monday, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani described the trip as a new turning point, which could bolster economic and trade ties with African nations. Last week, Iran became a member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which includes Russia, China, and India. In March, Iran agreed to restore ties with Saudi Arabia under a China-mediated deal. The death of Nizar Amri, a Tunisian national involved in clashes with sub-Saharan migrants last week, served as a catalyst for already rising racial tensions. Subsequently, several migrants were evacuated under police protection from their homes, facing heckling and hostility from locals. The tension escalated during Amri's funeral, further exacerbating the concerns and fears of both Tunisians and migrants. To brief us on the latest, I talked to Fadil Ali Riza, founder and editor-in-chief of Maskal.org, an independent news website in English and Arabic covering Tunisia.
From what we're seeing, while there was a sort of evacuations under police protection, we're also hearing reports from migrants speaking to rights groups that, in fact, Tunisian security forces were also attacking them as they were being moved, including being transported to the border and left there in what seems to be a buffer zone between the Tunisia-Libya border. We're also seeing more recent reports of some migrants from other African countries being transported to the Algerian border as well. So it's unclear exactly how many, what the numbers are on either side, but it does seem to be several hundred on both sides. Now, you mentioned the killing of a Tunisian man recently, but there was also in May a migrant from Benin was killed, apparently, allegedly by Tunisians. So, you know, this does seem to be a growing pattern of tension, unfortunately, which, you know, we can trace back at least to an escalation following President Kais Saied's speech in February, where he basically endorsed this racist conspiracy theory that migrants were basically coming to replace Tunisians, to change the demographic makeup of the country, very, very similar to European racist conspiracies about a great replacement of white Europeans by migrants coming from Africa.
Now that you mentioned Tunisia's President Kais Saied, is he taking a strict stance against migrants living in the country illegally as a way for him probably to evade responsibility for the country's deep economic woes and provoking an increase in tensions?
That's certainly one of the theories, one of the hypotheses. There may be some truth to that. There certainly is an economic crisis going on now. But, often in economic crises, you don't need a president or authorities to tell people to turn on the other, right? I think it's unfortunately a situation where society will look for scapegoats when they're facing economic crisis. And in this case, we've seen, not just the president endorsing it, which certainly has exacerbated the situation dramatically.
Is Europe adding fuel to the fire here? Tunisia is facing pressure from European countries to prevent large numbers of migrants from departing its coast.
Yeah, it does seem so. I mean, it was just last month that we saw the far-right Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni, with the UN Commission President van der Leyen in Tunis, meeting with President Kais Saied, offering this macro-financial assistance with a real focus on migration. And before that, we've seen EU assistance through a fund that was giving about 100 million euros each year that was very much focused on trying to get Tunisia to police migration domestically, to prevent migrants from leaving the country. We've also seen bilateral aid from Italy for several years, working to sort of train and equip and fund Tunisian Coast Guard to really have the sort of policy of preventing people from leaving the shores.
And lastly, Fadil, Safax has now become a breeding ground for rising tensions, xenophobic attacks on migrants, resulting in pervasive climate of fear. How can that be reversed?
Yeah, that's a good question. The president, after his February speech, really ignited tensions, attempted to try and maybe cool things down a little bit, it seemed, with a visit to Sfax, where he met with migrants. This was just, a month or two ago. But the visit was really, poorly planned, ineffective. But at the same time, I think the long-term solution really is about economic solutions, right? There needs to be economic solutions so that Tunisians also feel that their living standards, that their security are not threatened by migrants. And this has, so rhetoric can only do so much, I think.
That was Fadil Ali Riza, founder and editor-in-chief of Maskal.org, an independent news website in English and Arabic covering Tunisia. A rare snowfall dusted Johannesburg and other high-lying parts of South Africa on Monday, with forecasters warning of potential road closures and dangerously cold temperatures. Weather services say snow was reported across southern parts of Johannesburg's Gauteng province and was expected to continue falling throughout the day, also hitting the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal provinces. Rough areas, rough seas, and strong winds were expected to create hazardous conditions for small vessels off South Africa's eastern coast. The French news agency AFP says the light snowfall is part of a cold front that hit the country late last week, which morphed into a weather system called a cutoff low. A senior forecaster at the South African Weather Service says the last time the country witnessed the weather pattern was in 2012. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Barrow, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.